There's a magical cup that was stolen from the gods. There's a high school kid who has to get it back. There are killer chickens, killer serpents, and a helpful clown nymph. All coming up on this episode of Bookwords. Hi, I'm Sam, an 11-year-old who reads a lot.
And I'm Dana, his mom, who also reads a lot.
Welcome to Bookwords, where we read and discuss the best kids' books. We encourage our listeners to read the book before listening, especially because there are always spoilers in our episodes. To make sure you never miss new episodes and find out what we're reading next, follow us on Instagram and X at BookwordsPod.
Okay, so as always, we're going to start with a very short plot summary of the book. So in Percy Jackson and the Chalice of the Gods, Percy, Annabeth, and Grover have to embark on a new quest to find the Chalice of the Gods, which is a cup that the gods drink from, but if a non-god drinks from it, it gives immortality. It's been stolen from Ganymede, who is the cupbearer of the gods. Percy needs to go on the quest because he wants a letter of recommendation from Ganymede in order to get into god college, or demigod college, I guess. So the quest takes them first to Hebe, who's a goddess of youth, who's a 6-year-old girl, then to Iris, who's a messenger goddess. She's the goddess of rainbows. Then to Ellison, a river god. And then finally to Geras, who is the god of old age. And then finally they get the chalice back and they have to bring it to Mount Olympus. There's a lot of activity. Like all of the Percy Jackson books, it's very action-packed. And so now let's dive into what we thought of the book.
So I want to start with a question.
Yeah.
So in the original series, we could really see that the gods were like very selfish and they only cared about themselves. They didn't care about any of their brothers, sisters, or some are children.
Right. The demigods are their kids.
Right.
And the brothers, and they are each other's brothers and sisters and parents. Like right. Athena is Zeus's kid. Yeah. Keep right. going.
So the four gods, though, that we see in this book, they don't seem all that mean. Number one, we don't see any main gods in this book.
Right, we get a little bit of Poseidon, who's Percy's dad.
A little, but not a lot. More Ganymede, who's not a main god at all. Iris, also not a main god.
Goddess, right?
Right, goddess. Hebe, also not a main goddess. And then Geras, who, like we never even heard of him before this book, Geras.
Yeah, it's a good point. It seems like Rick Riordan is taking the series in the direction of dealing with lots of more secondary gods and goddesses.
And Rick Riordan is really showing us, like, how many gods and goddesses there actually are. Like, in the original series, we see more of the original. More, especially of Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades.
Mm-hmm.
But now we get a lot more of a sense of how many gods and goddesses there actually are.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. There's a lot of gods and goddesses in Greek mythology. And then they all had kids who were the demigods. So we even meet Iris's daughter, Blanche, in this book. She's kind of funny.
A lot of these gods, you see, they're selfish, but they do care, especially the ones in these books. They do care a little about other things. Iris cares about her daughter, like, a lot.
Right, that was a nice relationship.
The daughter doesn't care about her. For Hebe, she, like, cares about all the children in her arcade.
Or sort of, yeah. She wants to
karaoke thing.
Yeah, well, so Hebe is busy trying to turn old people young, and Geras is busy trying to prevent people from being upset about aging and, like, turning immortal.
So we really get two opposites.
Yeah, we get two opposite perspectives on getting old. Sam, you're far from getting old, but what do you think? Like, have you ever thought about what it's like to get old?
No. Right. I'll worry about that in 70 years.
Right. Well, Percy, as he reminds us a lot in this book, he was offered immortality in the last series and turned it down. And now in this book, he's clearly thinking a lot about immortality, which means you never get old because Ganymede, the chalice itself, is what prevents people from getting old. And Geras is like hates the chalice and thinks it's a terrible tool. because it prevents people from doing what is natural, which is getting old. What do you think about that?
I think Percy proud. There are different perspectives. You could say that Percy made the right decision by turning down immortality. You could say he made the wrong decision.
Because he points to Ganymede, who is forever young and beautiful, but is miserable. And in this book, it's all about immortality, and he doesn't seem to regret his decision at all. Like, he's with the chalice for a lot of the book, and he's not tempted to drink from it to try to become immortal. Instead, he feels bad for Ganymede that he's immortal. And by the way, that shows us a really sympathetic side of Percy that we haven't really seen as much in the first series. Like, he really felt bad for Ganymede. And so even though he really could have just walked away from this quest, because this quest, unlike the other ones, is not about him saving the world. There's not that much at stake here. He really just needs a recommendation letter. So he could have, like, walked away from Ganymede and gotten a recommendation letter from somebody else for college.
No, he can't really walk away. Like, you see a scene. It's like Ganymede says, is this the part where I'm supposed to threaten your life? Like, the gods will, like, kill you.
If he walks away from the quest, right, Ganymede might find him and kill him?
Right. Not find him. Like, you didn't need to find him. Snap a finger, Percy's dead.
Fair. Okay, fine. Although he does say, I could have walked away. And Poseidon, at the end, when Poseidon calls the school and then speaks to Percy, he says, like, you could have walked away, but you didn't. You stuck with your quest and helped Ganymede. And I think Percy didn't stick with it because he was scared of Ganymede. He really stuck with it because he felt bad for Ganymede, who has a sad story. He was this, like, normal teenager. And then Zeus thought he was beautiful and abducted him to Mount Olympus and made him a god, made him his cupbearer, and seems to be, like, weirdly obsessed with him and keeps him close all the time.
Ganymede doesn't seem like he wants to be a god.
Exactly. In his case.
And you could see why Garrus was mad at Ganymede, because, although it's like, It's not Ganymede's fault.
I know everyone's mad at this poor guy. They all Hera super mad at him and mean to him. Garrus wants to humiliate him. He gets a lot of hate, and it's not even his fault. He was just a good looking teenager
who was fault.
It's Zeus's fault, yeah. But in his case, immortality was a curse, not a blessing. And that's, I think Percy sees that really clearly. So I personally like that they have to go on these quests to get these recommendation letters, because it's kind of like Percy as a normal kid and also Percy as a demigod. But now let's talk about the quest. So Ganymede comes and says, you need to get back my chalice. So then they go to Hebe. They go to Hebe-Jeebies in Times Square to find the goddess Hebe, the goddess of youth. And she sets, like, these killer chickens on them.
That's
then they
cool.
see Iris, then... Iris, who, like, is selling crystals at a farmer's market.
But Iris is only there for, like, a scene, maybe two.
Two scenes. Then Ellison, the river god. And then we get to Garrus.
Tell me about these different... Ellison was funny. I liked Ellison the most out of probably all of them.
Did you? He was your favorite?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he was the only one that really had, like, he showed a bunch of character.
Like, he had real character?
Yeah, he had real character. The rest, like, Ganymede, like, he just wants his cut back.
He was just kind of terrified and nervous and anxious.
He was also nervous and anxious.
Like, he had mental health issues, Ganymede.
I know, but the river god, like, he had a good reason. Like, he didn't want anyone polluting his river. I don't want people robbing my house or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. He was very protective of his river. But then he got really scared of Percy. Percy explodes.
I didn't get that scene. Like, what happened there?
Percy explodes, like, and makes the whole river, like, kind of rise up really high and explode and then go back down. And he actually scares the river god.
I don't think it's scary. I think it's more of cleaning the river.
It did clean it, yeah.
So I think you can't really scare a river god.
No, but he was anxious. Then Percy came back up and he was having tea with Annabeth and was, like, traumatized by what had happened. My favorite of those, like, all the gods on the way was Hebe. I thought it was hilarious to have a goddess in the body of a 6-year-old girl or a 7-year-old girl. She has to be the youngest in every room. Which Annabeth uses that to...
Against her.
Yeah, to best her. But, like, I thought that whole place, Heebie-Jeebies, was, like, really funny and interesting. You have a karaoke bar in Times Square that has killer chickens in the middle in a pen. And the goddess, like, brings people there to have them sing songs from when they were young. And it actually makes them younger. And she's obsessed with being young. So like all the books that we've read, this one is very fast-paced. Like, it goes from scene to scene to scene. But in between all of the action, there's this really these nice scenes of Percy at home. Like, Percy's home life with his mom and his stepdad, and now Annabeth comes a lot, is, like, very sweet and nice.
It's nice. I want more scenes when he gets a new sister or brother or new human child.
A new baby.
Yeah, a new human child.
Right. Were you surprised that he took the news of his mom's pregnancy so well?
Oh.
Why?
I don't know. Because why would it be a bad thing? Like, for me, baby, no. Like, why would that be a bad thing?
I don't know. They were nervous to tell him. They were nervous that he would feel jealous or...
Jealous? He's a demigod. What do you mean jealous? Jealous of what? I guess, like, jealous of the
of the parents life. Of the parents' attention going to the baby. I don't know. I don't know why.
Yeah, like, why would you?
But they were nervous to tell him.
He's, like, away doing quests every second. Like, yeah, how is his parents supposed to, like, number one, he won't even know if his parents focus on the baby because he won't be there.
I think it's nice for him. Like, he even though he's a demigod, he's having a sense of normalcy. Like, he's gonna have a sibling. He has a girlfriend. He's trying to get into college. Like, I thought that was a nice balance in the book. Even though his day-to-day is pretty nuts, he's battling river gods and finding, you know, killer chickens in the middle of Times Square. But he also has, like, these normal experiences.
One thing I think Rick Riordan could have done better, maybe.
Yeah.
Is the only children that have real powers... are the children of Poseidon, Zeus, and Hades. Like, we see Nico from Hades in the original series. Percy and Thalia. Like, they're the only ones that could really... that really have, like, power. Like, superpowers.
Like, Annabeth doesn't have any power?
Annabeth doesn't have any power. She's smarter, but it's not a superpower.
Intelligence is a superpower.
Not really, though.
Yeah, it is. She gets them out of, like, all of their dangers.
Yeah, but not really. It's not really a superpower. And then we have, like, Clarice, son of Ares, and she's better at fighting.
That's you mean daughter of Ares.
Daughter of Ares. Oopsies. But she's, like, better at fighting, which is a real superpower.
And now it's time to book in a rating. We each rate the book on a scale of 1 to 10, and then we combine both of our ratings for the book's final score. I'm going to give this book an 8.9.
I'm going to give it an 8.4.
An 8.4?
Yeah.
Okay. So that means the combined rating is 17.3.
Yeah.
Which puts this in our rankings of books. In third place with a 17.3.
And now it's time for the Bookwords Book Awards, where we keep a running tally of the books with the best main characters, coolest supporting characters, most awesome settings, craziest plot twists, and of course, most villainous villains.
So first is the best main character.
Right now our list is like this. Ben Ripley's in first place.
From Spy School.
Stanley Almas from Holes in second place. And Jet Baranov from Unplugged in third place. Percy is going to be either 1, 2, 3, or 4.
So what do you think?
I think Percy's clear cut number one.
Clear cut. Okay.
Clear number one.
Okay, so that means we enjoy reading Percy.
Very much better than Stanley and Jet Baranov. Who?
I like all those main characters, but I do think Percy...
is number one.
Well, he's funny. Yeah. I happen to really enjoy his humor. The truth is all four of these main characters are funny, but Percy's funny... he's brave, he's mature, he's maturing a lot, he has a deep appreciation for his friends. And I think we just know him really well because we've read the first 5 books of the first series, and now we're on, you know, well into knowing Percy well. So, okay, I agree. He could take first place. Let's go to the best supporting character.
Our list is like this. Erica Hale's in first place.
From Spy School.
Brooklyn from Unplugged in second place. And Zero from Holes is in third place.
And okay, so for the supporting character, we'll go with Annabeth.
Annabeth.
Right. Even though Grover's also pretty important. But we'll go with Annabeth.
And I think Annabeth comes in second place.
I agree. Erica Hale is like one of my favorite book characters of all time from Spy School. She's a really cool, fierce assassin type. Annabeth also is very smart, very sharp, like a strong, super smart girl. But there's something about Erica as a spy.
I think Annabeth clearly, like, Brooklyn and Zero, like, don't even stand a chance.
Oh, totally, totally. I really think Erica and Annabeth are similar, but we could keep Erica in first place and put Annabeth in second place. Yeah. Annabeth in second place. I just think Erica is a little edgier, a little fiercer. She's, like, really in charge. Annabeth is a little more supporting to Percy in this book. So that's why we'll keep it the way it is.
Okay. Best setting. Okay, right now our list is like this. Camp Green Lake is in first place. The Oasis.
From Holes. That was from Holes.
From Unplugged is in second place. And Spy School from Spy School is in third place. What do you think on New York City?
Right, so the setting of this book is New York City, basically. The whole thing happens in New York City. I'm going to put it in second place. Camp Green Lake from Holes is a very, like, distinct, classic kind of setting. But the way that Riordan uses New York City in this book, I think is really, really special and very fascinating. Like, you really get to know the city. They're on the subway and off the subway. Mount Olympus is sitting above the Empire State Building. They're talking about New York City street fairs where the goddess Iris is selling crystals. They're going into Times Square. They're going to Yonkers to go see the Sawmill River. It's just like New York City is interwoven into the whole book in a really, really cool way that I think is very, very, I don't know, interesting. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Okay, best plot twist. Right now, Alligator Farm from Unplugged is at number 1. Murray is the Mole from Spy School is number 2. And Kissing Kate Barlow is number 3 from Holes. Right, and our plot twist is going to be Garrus, or Gary, being the thief of the chalice.
Right, so we finally find out who it is that stole the chalice of the gods. And it's Gary, or Garrus. Not such a crazy plot twist.
I think it's not such a crazy plot twist because we already knew someone named Gary.
Well, I think it's not such a...
Like, Gary being the thief for the chalice wasn't, like, surprising in any way.
Yeah, this book, a lot of the other books were all building up to, like, to a major reveal. That was the plot twist.
It's not real. Yeah. The major reveal happened in the...
Like, the alligator farm, like, catching the mole. Like, it was all building up to this one major moment where you have a plot twist. Here, this was kind of just, like, proceeding in a, like, step-by-step way. It wasn't such a big deal when you found out who took the chalice. Like, every chapter of the book, they were making progress. And it wasn't such a big deal who took the chalice. It was more important like to get it back.
Yeah.
So, like, finding out who took it was just, like, one step of getting it back. So, not a big plot twist. Okay, the best villain. So right now, we have the Warden from Holes in number 1. We have Ivory from Unplugged in number 2. We have Murray from Spy School in number 3. Here, the villain, I guess, was Garrus, although he wasn't...
Not much of a villain.
I mean, in the end, they're, like, hugging and crying together.
Right. I think he's pretty clearly number 4.
Right.
Like, he's not a villain.
He's not scary. He's not a villain. He's just a god who took a cup.
Right. Like, he's not...
He's a god who took a cup from another god.
Yeah, he's going at number 4.
Right, not so scary. Okay, that brings us to the end of the episode. We are excited to reveal that on the next episode of Bookwords, we will be reading...
Theodore Boone, Kid Lawyer by John Grisham.
If you're enjoying the discussion, and you read with us often, don't forget to follow us at Bookwords Pod on Instagram and X to stay updated and share your thoughts on the books and what we should read next.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Bookwords.